Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I am not dead. It was a little perilous earlier, but I'm fine.
Oh, God. What happened?
Well, I just had a hell of a day, more than anything. It's been tomorrow's first day of school, and it was like, yeah. So I filed to withdraw and homeschool my two youngest ones.
Oh.
Because that's where we're at. They didn't want to give me, they didn't want to give me adequate virtual options for number two because she has an IEP. And I said, fuck that.
What is an IEP?
An IEP is an individualized education plan. I think that's the right,
yes, acronym. That's it. Yeah. That's correct.
But yeah, basically it's
Teacher
just,
Tim jumps in. He knows what's up.
Yeah,
I'm not a fucking teacher. Don't lump me in with them.
She has special education needs and, because she's autistic. And so there's just like that plan lets them legally alter her situation at school. So like she can have an aide throughout the day and she can stop and take breaks when other people have to keep their nose to the grindstone, if you will. She can, if she gets stressed out, she can just walk out. And that's something other kids can't do, but she can just get up and leave.
You just peace and, out and like,
yeah, she needs she's to. Just like gone.
By the way, Pernell and Chris are here as well.
They
probably,
are.
Hi.
Describe your IEPs.
Yeah, describe your IEPs. But the bullshit part is like, I have to sit multiple times throughout the year and like,
yep.
You have to do
CSE meetings.
Yeah, and they have to read me these long ass rights. And every time I'm like, for the love of God, I've been doing this since she was four. She's 14 now. Maybe you could just not read me that. it's a good time. But ultimately, one of the biggest things is that she needs speech therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And by law, under the ADA, they have to pay for speech therapy. In Kentucky, as it were, they have to, even if a child is being homeschooled, they have a set amount of their budget that they're required to put aside for kids that are in private schools so that they can still receive services from the district. So when you're homeschooling in Kentucky, you're not a homeschool, you're a private school. The problem was is that when I called to find out if while homeschooling she could still receive her speech therapy, among other things, the answer was all of our funding for special needs services is shared with the Christian school, the private Christian school in our county. And there is no funding for homeschoolers.
Wow.
Thanks, Christians.
Yeah. So that was that was a punch in the gut. Although, thank goodness, the guidance counselor here is a god among men because she was able to get the director to approve it. And so we, like, at 7:00 p.m., they emailed me and was like, "So she gets funding." Yeah. We worked it out, but the funding is still shared, so it may not be enough for her to cover the whole year. Unless what they're going to try to do is like get it to where if there's an opening in the virtual academy, she'll be able to apply for that. But in the past, they wouldn't let me do the virtual academy because it couldn't be customized for an IEP. But then they bought a new one, but then it filled up and her grades weren't high enough for her to be accepted into it anyway. So now, if some crazy shit happens and there's an opening or they hire an extra teacher and they allow more middle school kids to do it, she can join the virtual academy. She's at the top of the list.
That's good.
In the meantime, she gets to sit here and read books at home and call it school.
Doesn't sound bad to me.
Yeah, it was. I think part of it was initially she was going to go back, but she is immunocompromised. She's been vaccinated. But of course, breakthroughs are happening all over the place, and they weren't doing mask mandates, you know, till today. Today, they're like, oh, by the way, mask mandate.
So, oh, that's good. If Kentucky's doing it, that gives me hope for New York.
They kicked it in at the last minute, literal last minute.
Ashley's friggin' hospital didn't have a mandate on until like mid last week.
I'm telling you, man, even with it, I fully expect that there's going to be a lot of kids that don't follow it.
Definitely. And also, even if the kids didn't, I mean, I don't really foresee many teachers going, but so they can't go but so far to say, put that mask on your face, what are they going to really do, right?
You know what I find funny about that? It's a little bit of a tangent. I won't go too far into it. They have no fucking problem enforcing a dress code and measuring how long your goddamn skirt is.
Don't get me wrong.
You to put a mask on, fuck out of here.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I don't disagree with what you're saying. The problem with it boils down to the willingness for the student to comply with an instruction. Like, you have a mandate for a mask. You have a statement related to like clothing, like a rule for clothing, right? Now, a kid comes into school, and the one kid is like, it's like a class of 30 students, and the one kid is out of dress code. So now the teacher will signal them out. Say, hey, you're not dressed appropriately. Go to the principal's office, right? Now, if it's a generally good kid, they're going like, crap, I don't want to get in trouble for this, but I guess I got to go to the principal's office. And they're just going to comply, and I'll go through the motions of you're suspended, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like with regards to this scenario, and the potential for
it to get suspended for dress code violations.
Whatever punishment they take anything.
You to the youth service center and make you pick out youth clothes and change.
Now that's just absurd.
Yeah. But a couple of years ago, number one wore shorts that were too short, and they made her wear leggings under her shorts. Yeah. Well, here because it's 3 inches above the knee.
I'd be the kid just like begging, can you just let me go home instead? That's a much better punishment than making me go get someone else's clothes. Just send me home. Jesus.
The interesting thing is, do you know how they measure that 3 inches here?
I'm assuming you have to get a ruler.
They lay their cell phone on the teenage girl's thigh. Nothing bad could come from that.
Yeah, well, that's freaky as all hell. Now also, that's
we have two male principals. So, you know, that,
how is that allowed?
That I don't like. That's weird. And they don't do that thing where they're like, hey, we need to get a female faculty member over here to do this check or anything like that.
No. Ask me how I know about this, because I've had this fight.
We got to get you out of Kentucky. But then again, if we take you out of Kentucky, that's one less good family in Kentucky. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this because that's just fucking bullshit. I don't like it. Right. And like, the thing about it is like, it's like, it doesn't, you know, tie in, like, it doesn't like it. Well, how am I say it? Like, so the idea what I was leading into with the tangent or the scenario was just that I just foresee teachers being tired, like already being stupidly tired regarding this whole COVID and mask thing and all that. And it's the fact that it's a very, very publicized publicized mandate, wear a mask in school. And it's not going to be one kid who doesn't want to do it. It's going to be multiple kids who are just like, I'm going to put it below my nose, or I'm just going to take it off when the teacher's not looking. And it's just going to be waves of defiance that breaks teachers down to the point where it's like, what the hell are you supposed to do? Like, because discipline,
like, you got to pick your battles.
Exactly. Yeah. And when it comes to discipline in schools, what's important and needed, though a lot of people don't talk about it, is the student body's willingness to comply. If they won't comply to the point where they kind of outmatch the teacher's energy levels, it just kind of goes out the window. I had a teacher threaten to throw kids out the window after he got hit in the head with a book in the dark. Someone turned the lights off and people threw their books in front of the class and knocked them out. Got up and freaked the hell out on everybody.
I mean, realistically, the inability for them to actually mandate it, I mean, it's mandated, but for them to actually enforce it is the reason that I was like, nope, I'm homeschooling. That's just the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
Because Number three isn't old enough to be vaccinated. She's only 8. Mm-hmm. And number two is vaccinated, but it's been shown that the Pfizer vaccine in people who are immunocompromised either doesn't take or has to have a booster, and they haven't started doing boosters yet for those. So
yeah. Right, I think boosters are going to be our way of life now.
Oh yeah, certainly.
Pretty much. We lost a window of surprise for this thing because dipshits want to be dipshits. Though one thing I'll say, which is a small tangent, but it's related to the topic, is...
What? A tangent on this show? What?
From Purnell?
Perish the thought.
Cole didn't even finish her tangent.
No, this is all...
I said I wasn't going to harp on it too hard and still ended up doing it.
Because it's a fun conversation, you know?
She ended up running the harp through a distortion pedal.
Yeah.
It's the fact that I just feel like, in a sense... While obviously people who didn't vaccinate early on likely made it worse, I do genuinely feel that, unfortunately,
variants... You don't need to qualify that. They did make it worse.
Yeah.
No. Well, I'm only saying it because sometimes when I make this point, people take it to mean that I'm excusing them, which I don't. Which is to say that due to this being a global scenario and the fact that other countries are handling the vaccinations differently than we are, as long as we offer just general travel, I'm not pulling that nonsense, but border bullshit that not wackadoos want to chat about, and we're allowing international travels and such. All it takes is like that same scenario to take place in another country. And then someone travels to that country, unfortunately brings it back. And then those variants end up breaking through and we still end up having to deal with things like deltas and lambdas and stuff. But
well, the thing about that, sorry to interrupt, but the thing about that is that, if we had actual herd immunity, mm-hmm. then those breakthroughs wouldn't happen and they wouldn't be able to take root the way that they are.
Yeah, it'd be a
because
lot
we can't bypass 50% of the fucking population. We don't get herd immunity, and that's what lets those variants just fly.
Oh, no, the thing is, like, I'm not saying that that's not right. It's true. I'm just thinking about more like if the variant, you know, came to be in Colombia, because that's where one of them came from. It came to be in Colombia, was transported back here. Then the fact that breakthroughs exist wouldn't have changed, but we'd have a lot less cases regardless because the breakthrough cases are less common. Ultimately, unvaccinated people are screwing the pooch up in general. But like some people are saying that we wouldn't have had, you know, these variants and stuff like that if it weren't for those unvaccinated people. But that part, I'm like, no, we would have still had those. But the crazy caseloads we're getting right now would not have happened. And it confounds me that people are so kind of aloof that they can't grasp that that's how these things play out. And they're like, you told me I didn't have to wear a mask if I got vaccinated. Now you're saying I don't? Like, yeah, that's how this shit works. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. It's like a woman.
A lot of people have never played Plague Inc.
The thing is, like, but you can apply it to other stuff too. Like, imagine a guy who doesn't understand like general biology. A woman's like, I can have kids. Menopause happens.
Well, that is now, also a lot kids. Of men.
Which is sad, but yeah. You're right. Actually, how you mentioned it. Like, what do you mean you can't have kids? You can have kids 2 months ago. Well, yeah, I had this whole thing. It's biology. I can't have kids anymore. It happens to all women. But no, that doesn't make sense. You could do it 2 months ago. You should be able to do it now. Like, fuck you. You're so dumb. Like, and it happens with so many. God, people are fucking stupid. I got nothing else. People are fucking dumb.
Chris, how was your week?
How many kids are you homeschooling?
I was homeschooled.
Really?
Yeah, no, K-12.
Yeah. That's reaction to any time anybody tells me they're homeschooled.
Yeah, literally, I've heard that every sure. single time.
How did field trips work? Like, did your folks go like, you know, this?
That's the part I'm looking for.
Well, you usually like going to the mall today. Have like little homeschool pods that do things like, together.
Yeah, yeah, we were in a group, so I had a lot of other friends who were like homeschooled in the area.
Yeah, that's a lot better than what I was thinking, because my brain's like, today's field trip is mom needs to get groceries and you're coming with.
Yeah, that is a lot of it. But then you like you work in ways like, okay, how much is tax going to be if we buy this? Or, you know, you find ways to like work in practical math.
Maybe.
I don't think. If you're lucky. And if you're kidding a shit who throws a fit when you're in the middle of the store. But the field trip part is what I'm excited for the most, because like we already have been hiking trails and stuff this summer, and we just get to keep doing what we were fucking doing. Because who cares if they're doing their schoolwork at the campground or at home, as long as I mark that they were present, you know?
I've been to a few places. We went to NASA once, which is, you know, it felt like going like across the country, but really it was just the other side of Texas.
I mean, might as well be.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the power of Texas.
Yeah, no, no complaints, really. It was kind of nice because I really just kind of worked on stuff from beginning to end without like doing any kind of real breaks or anything. So my school day was about 3 hours, and the rest I dedicated to video games. Or other stuff. Like, I did other stuff too.
You can't play games on school nights here.
We didn't have that for very long.
I've had that rule since number one was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And she graduates this year.
Well, there you go.
Speaking of video games.
Whoa.
What? I tried to give you the segue earlier with Plague Inc., but I lost it.
Yeah, I ruined that shit.
Tried to help you dice. Out, but...
We actually, a few months before coronavirus really took over everything, we had a party here, and we played Plague Inc., and someone named it the MagFest virus, and it just destroyed... We're like, wow, this is way too realistic.
Yeah,
that game is surprisingly accurate.
Yeah, shit's scary. Good shit. But video games. We should we should
anyways, video games.
Shit's scary.
I don't know how to get that back to talking about video games. Oh no.
Just don't try.
Yeah.
Just say shit's scary.
Got a lot of games to talk about tonight. Should we get to reviews?
Might as well.
Everyone excited? Woo.
Yes.
All right, well, first game to talk about tonight. First game to talk about tonight is called Fuga Memories of Steel, or Fuga Melodies of Steel, developed and published by CyberConnect 2, released July 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, Steam, and Epic Game Store for $39.99. One fateful night, a peaceful village is thrown into the flames of war. Determined to save their families, a group of children boards a giant tank and begins an offensive charge. Purnell, tell us about Fuga. Is this something that we should be keeping our eyes on, or is it something we should forget about?
This review is over. This review is canceled.
This whole show is canceled. Cancel culture has taken effect on the SML podcast.
Crap.
I think you should forget about listening to the rest of this episode.
I was wondering if Cole is still there or not.
Yeah. I keep forgetting I can press control.
It's getting late. I gotta go.
So Cole was like, well, I reacted, but I didn't think the audience needed to hear my reaction. Let me hit that up. Oh, mercy.
All right. So Purnell, tell us about Fuga, Melodies of Steel.
Puns aside, Fuga is actually looking online for those who are familiar with this franchise or the previous game. Apparently, this has an association / tie in with an older game called Sola to Robo. So if you're familiar with that, just slipping that out there, you might be interested in this. But even if you're not, like someone like me who has Sola to Robo shrink wrapped upstairs, well, guess what?
This is still a decent game.
Oh, yeah, man. That's my life. Unopened games. But what is this game, though? So the idea behind it is early on, the game's narrative sets up to where an army of Dobermans called the Burman Empire. I think it's amazing that they're all Dobermans. Attack a small village and in the middle of the night. But just before the attack lets off, a radio signal breaches the room of a small child, telling him to progress to a cave on the outskirts of town. So he and his friends run to this cave and discover a ginormous tank hidden in there. They go into the tank.
It sounds like Blaster Master other than the Dobermans.
It actually, now that you mentioned it, it kind of does. That is pretty much the Blaster Master leaded. The same thing here. They find the tank, they board the tank, and just like in Blaster Master, well, the US version anyway, this kid just miraculously knows how to pilot a tank. And all these kids load up and they hit the road to push back against this army. And it's kind of cool how it works out, because I didn't expect the gameplay loop that this game produces. And how it works is, it's sort of like a Slay the Spire type deal, where you kind of travel along a straight line, and occasionally you have to choose the route you want to take. But each of the routes is composed of a bunch of nodes. Those nodes...
It's a node game.
It's surprising how many of these games exist, but I can't complain. I love them.
Yeah, a lot, and that's no joke.
Jesus.
I'm back. Well, what did I miss?
Man, the pendulum swings both ways at this moment. Oh my God. So each of the nodes represents a variety of events, but the one that will primarily drive the gameplay, though I'll talk about some of the other event types later, is the attack nodes, which is an indicator that you'll be fighting one or more battles in succession. The way battles in this game play out is you have a hit point meter and an SP meter. SP, just like in any other game, represents your skill usage, and hit points are the hit points of the tank itself. The quote-unquote party members are represented by the three turrets on the cannon, and the different children, which can be slotted into the tank's armament slot. So let's say you have like a gun.
I don't want to hear about slotting children.
God,
this sounds awful. Well,
guess what? Buckle up, boyo, because this fook is going to roll.
That's so, fooked up. It is.
Each turret has two slots in it, which can be used by basically occupied by one of the children, and each of the children can represent one of three different types of guns: grenade launchers, machine guns, and cannons. And in typical fashion for these kinds of games, like the machine guns are like for quick fire that doesn't do much damage, but they're highly accurate. The cannon is highly powerful but inaccurate. And the other item is just kind of like middle of the road, middle damage, middle accuracy. As you fight the enemies, though, they come at you in a variety of different types. But the thing that works against them, aside from the norm, is that they have delay indicators under their hit point meters that are represented by colors that are similar to the different guns I just described. So might be like a red clock on an enemy. Cannons are red. And it indicates that if you want to use a cannon attack on that enemy, you'll delay its turn in the turn order by a short period of time. Of course, once you've used up all their quote-unquote clocks, you can't delay them anymore until they get an attack off. So it's not like a foolproof plan to keep you from getting hit at all at any point in the game. The kids also get special attacks that they can learn as they level up. And they've arranged from anything from like status inducing attacks to healing elements that can heal the tank as a whole, and so on and so forth. Two other things need to be described about the battle system, though. There are link attacks. Well, three things. Link attacks, which is built off of a quote, relationship meter, which I'll talk about in a bit, how you build it up, which allows you to get like special buffs when you max out their relationships in a battle sequence. There's also hero mode, which is something that happens when their mood is elevated in combat and they get really excited. And for five turns, they get a special ability that only works for that is unique for each child in the game. But now here's the sad one. The element of the game that is really rough, if you can avoid it, go for it. And that is the soul cannon. The soul cannon is a ridiculously powerful gun that decimates pretty much any enemy in battle. However, in order to use the cannon, your tank has to have critical level hit points, and then you have to sacrifice a child to use the gun. So what? The ammo is children. Yes, the ammo to the gun is children's souls.
All right, I'm sold.
And it's not like a thing where you do it and it's like, well, one turn later the kid's back. No, they are dead for good. If you use that gun, someone's gonna die, and I'm not doing that. So, and the game makes sure to tell you, like, hey, you know, don't hesitate if you need to use this, because it's the difference between one of you dying or all of you dying. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, don't tell these kids that. That's fucked up. But hey, that's war, baby.
That is really crazy. I like that.
Imagine like actual war taking place where our countries had weapons that were powered by actual souls, and just note how quickly it would be funneling soldiers into that fucker. Power it up! power. I'm like, no! But outside of combat, there are two other, three other scenarios that can take place. There's like town sequences where you can kind of roll up to a village and do like trades to like take like scraps and stuff you earn in battle, and you can trade it for other stuff in town to like get like stuff that you can use in combat or in your intermission base. Intermission being the second event you can get, which allows you to explore the tank because the tank is large enough to have a freaking community in it. All the kids live inside of it. And there's a bunch of amenities like a mess hall, an observation deck, a garden, et cetera, et cetera. And you can kind of talk to the different kids to build their affinity relationships up. And you can also like upgrade the tank and a variety of other things inside of it. It's a surprisingly intricate scenario there.
You can build up relationships with these children before you sacrifice them to the soul cannon.
If you're a monster, I will never do it. Like, it's so messed up. Like, I just can't. But I gotta admit, I mean, even though the kids are all like, you know, once they get, they have certain elements where the kids are like happy go lucky and like, hi, I'm so nervous talking to girls, blah, 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 in the intermission sequences. But then they balance that levity up by, oh crap, critical damage, soul cannon is available. I'm like, I ain't using it. I'll find a way out. Screw you. I'm not doing it. And the other thing that comes to mind is like there's expeditions you can go on where, like you can explore like little ruins, like little pocket dungeons, not like real dungeons because the kids can't die or anything in there. It's just a matter of walking around, looking for treasures and stuff and things you can use to eventually upgrade your tank and expand on the facilities inside of it.
This inspires two children.
Although I honestly found myself very much appreciative of this game. I do appreciate the fact that it takes the, you know, the niceness of like, you know, the children comic. Cause as a lately in this day and age where like life is just frustrating, it's all ball sacks and people are being stupid. It's kind of nice to just have these games where it's like a bunch of children banding together to fight against bullshit. That's beyond their control for the time being. Cause now they're playing a giant tank and they, you know, it's just, a nice sense of camaraderie there, something that the real world is sorely lacking. And honestly, the gameplay loop is exceptionally fun. I can see myself feeling a little bored of the intermissions over time because they're not particularly riddled with substance. It's just like a little quick, cheapy conversation. Like, I'm a kid, you're a kid, let's be kids together. But, it doesn't hurt the game either. It's just a thing where it's like, I want to get back to the action. I don't need to talk to these kids. But in the end, I found this game to be a great time. I'm enjoying it. I feel as though more people will enjoy it. The music is good in it, too. It's very dramatic.
Shout out to the art department as well, because I really like the visuals in this game.
Oh, yeah. And they actually go an extra bit of a mile, too, because like, between chapters, they kind of give you like a CG image or you know, like a CG image, and they'll note in the corner who drew the image. So it's like they do actually pay respect to the people who did the artwork in the game, too.
That's awesome.
So, but all in all, yeah, this game is right up the alley. Like, I was very happy when it came through, and I'm doubly happy that it did not disappoint.
Then $40 on this one. What do you think about Fuga Melodies of Steel?
I think it is a legit buy. It's a good time, especially if you already are a fan of as what Tim referred to as the Node games. This is a quality Node game.
And you have to sacrifice children.
No, you don't have to.
Hey, kid, got anxiety when talking to girls? We got a way to fix that.
We'll turn you into a bullet. We'll shoot you right out of you.
It's easier than talking to girls. At least sign me up.
Oh, my Lord. Shifting gears dramatically, the next game to talk about is called AO the Clown. Developed and published by Cloud M1, released July 28th on the Switch for $19.99. In AO's hometown, things are generally peaceful. Accompanied by his talented circus dog, Bo, AO juggles in the park, hangs out at the carnival, and longs after his shoemaker's granddaughter until one day Bo goes missing. Tim, what's going on with AO the Clown?
Man, I bet you all thought we were done talking about games where you sacrifice children tonight. Well,
Bo knows sacrifice.
Yeah. Bo knows sacrifice.
That's 100%. A good throwback.
It is. Yeah, so what we got here is a pretty simple, straightforward, kind of made for a younger age group, 2.5D platformer. You play as the eponymous Bo, the clown, as you're confronting the weird things that have happened to his town. Though, I mean, when you're just always a clown, how not weird is your town to begin with? So, yeah, you run around these levels. You jump eventually. It doesn't let you jump right away. It withholds the jump from you in the first level. You can't jump until the cobbler fixes your squeaky shoes so that you can jump. It's fine. I mean, like, the first level's designed so that you won't have to jump. And then, though it's weird in the second level, because you come to a pit that you have to jump over, and I was just like, well, I can't fucking jump, so I guess I'll just run into it. And then it turns out you just have to talk to the shoemaker a second time. He's in the level, like, hanging out there, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, by the way, I fixed your shoes here. Don't plummet to your death. It's like, oh, thanks, bud. Thanks. Cool. Big thumbs up. Could have used that before I walked 10 feet to the right. but alas, here we are. So yeah, it's a pretty, I think the levels are pretty, graphically it's pretty good looking. In as much as, I mean, it's not like, you know, a total feast for the eyes, but it has a clean look to it. Especially for a game that looks like it, you know, wasn't made on like the most gigantic of budgets. But I think the aesthetic they're going for, just kind of having the simple, colorful, happy, kid-friendly game, looks very good, and it moves pretty well, and the controls for the platforming feel pretty good. The jump feels good. That's always important. Feels solid. You know, not the world's best jump, but it's a good jump. But I do like the art style and how clean everything looks, even though, you know, it's kids and clowns and fun young kid stuff. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so this is an E-rated game. It's good for everyone. Yeah. It's good for the family, good for younger audiences.
Yeah. As you go through levels, there's like, you know, little collectibles hidden about. There's side areas to go through to look for hidden stuff, which is relatively simple to get to. It's not just straightforward platforming in every level. They do find ways to change things up ever so slightly. If it's, you know, just like little miniature fetch quests, or a beehive falls on your head, causing you to have to run speedily away from bees. The game is trying to keep things fresh from level to level, and give you new abilities as you go along. As I mentioned, in the second level, it gives you this crazy ability to jump in the air, unheard of before in platformers. But they give you, like, limited use weapons, like a sword, which is a balloon sword, of course, which has, like, a charge attack. You eventually get a balloon, which lets you float a little bit. You get other stuff after that you can, like, shoot, that it dishes out. Now, you know, this isn't a game that is really, you know, like you said, it's E for everyone. It's not really a game that's made for adults, and I don't think this, you know, kind of kiddie, clowny aesthetic is going to appeal to older kids and adults, nor is it meant to. So, you know, where the rubber really meets the road is, how does this apply? How does this game appeal to a younger child? And fortunately, I have one on hand, or had one on hand, to try the game out. He is not here.
Oh, no, did you fire them out of a cannon?
Yes, sorry.
The only way to do it.
Bad news. Yeah, I didn't want to talk about how bad my day was, but, you know,
here we are. You did say there would be child sacrifices in this review.
Oh. Yeah, I did have to, you know, defend the homestead. So, well, what else could I do but load my child's soul into my old Civil War cannon and blast him at those filthy fucking Canadians?
All about the soul cannon.
The helpers are going to be listening to this review like, what the hell?
That's what they get for only listening to their review.
Yeah, that's what they get,
yeah.
Basically.
They listen to the whole show, people.
Yeah, that's where all the good, all the best stuff happens. Anyways... So, yeah, where was I? My kid, yeah, he tried the game out. Right. So the game has varying difficulties. On the normal difficulty, near as I can tell, the difference is that On normal difficulty, your character gets 3 hits before he dies. And you have a limited number of lives. Not sure if it kind of like caught me off guard that extra lives were a thing in this game. You know, it feels like something that's been kind of going away in recent years, other than like even in like hardcore platformers. Like if I'm thinking of like Super Meat Boy, you don't have like limited lives. You're just throwing yourself these bite-sized levels. Either way, so you have limited lives on normal mode. So if you run out of lives, you will be kicked back to the world map and have to start the level over. It seems on easy mode, you get 4 hits and you get unlimited lives. And my kids seem to have a pretty decent time with it. He didn't play it too much because he's fucking obsessed with the Pokemon trading card game now. So that was my fucking weekend, which we didn't get to my tangent of what my life has been lately, but it's been that. But you know, he did have a fine time playing it, and you know, got through a few levels without, you know, my intervention or getting frustrated. I suspect that it could still use a bit more easing for younger players to, like, you know, really be able to go with the game, like just have infinite health or have it so the balloon ability that I mentioned that lets you float, just make that like infinite. Just make it so you can infinitely float around, and so there's less danger of falling down pits. Because that's what I've seen out of some of the other platforms he's played, namely like the some of the Nintendo stuff, is they really, like, when they're making the game easy, they're not messing around. They're kind of the leaders in making games more accessible for young kids. So it makes me wonder, like, this game, I think it is threading a bit of a needle with who it is going to appeal to, because it is a very, you know, young aesthetic with like clowns and stuff. So it's like, how long is colorful clown cutesy world appealing to a kid? When do they
basically until pretending to be scared of clowns is cool? That hits around like middle school, I think.
I don't know if that's cool or just like reasonable.
See,
I am not afraid of clowns.
No, me neither.
But what the hell was I going to say? Yeah, you know, when does tragedy strike their life and they become, you know, a grim, dark edge lord? That is the question. So I think, you know, you're looking, I don't think it's accessible enough for kids younger than like 5. So I think like 5, 6, 7 is maybe like the age range you're looking for. And even like, you know, a 7-year-old might think they're a little too cool for this school. So it's, you know, I don't think it's like a slam dunk even for a younger kid. But you know, it is a kid-friendly aesthetic. Like, if you want something that is solidly not going to have the swear words or be, you know, something you don't have to police, this is that game. If you want something that's guaranteed they're gonna, well, there's nothing you can buy for your child that's gonna guaranteed they're gonna like. So yeah.
Well, admission to this show is $20. What do you think of AO the Clown?
I think it's a bit of a try it, just because, like, I wish it was a bit more featured with the younger kid accessibility. I think it's pretty solid all around with what it's going for and the quality of the levels and such. But, you know, it's not exceptional, but it's pretty solid. It's all right.
And the difficulty gripes that you have could easily be addressed through a patch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's not difficulty gripes for me. Like, you know, I'm not saying I had problems.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
But I'm saying it could yet be made, I think, even a bit more simple for the younger kids to be able to really get into
it. It's okay if you struggle. Yeah. It's okay.
No, I'm talking about games. No. Come on. I mean, I set my kid. Come on.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dragonstar Varnir, developed by Compileheart and Idea Factory, published by Idea Factory International. Release August 3rd on the Switch for $29.99. Condemned by the Dragon's Curse, what must they sacrifice? Purnell, tell us about Dragonstar Varnir.
I bet I know.
Well, one thing about this game that really surprised me was the number of changes that they actually made to the Switch version compared to the PS4 version. Most notably, the addition of a new soul dragon, which can be used by sacrificing some of the little sisters that you're raising back at the camp.
You're sacrificing children again? What?
No. What the hell is happening with games this week?
Honestly, this game is grim in that sense, but thankfully not in the form of sacrificing into a soul dragon. But
soul dragon.
With the plot of this game, honestly, that's not too far from what the game is all about. So, the premise of Dragonstar Varnir is this is a world where witches exist, but there's a weird aspect to the witches in that this is also a magical world populated by dragons. And each of these witches has their magical power imbued upon them by dragons that sleep within their wombs. And
what?
Yes. And I am not making this up. This is
no, all it's Compileheart. I totally believe that.
This is totally the plot.
Didn't even believe it.
So, the idea behind this game is in this kingdom, the government, or the empire, because it's always an empire, believes that these witches have a copacetic relationship with the dragons that are terrorizing the kingdom, so they're being hunted by the kingdom, in addition to the dragons just being fucking awful dragons. Now, back to the thing about the dragon womb bit. So,
that was racist against dragons right here, I gotta say.
Well, dragons are awful in this game. So the idea, though, is that these dragons are slowly, you know, growing inside of their wombs. And, of course, the way they grow is by being fed. So the characters have to eat dragon meat and drink dragon blood in order to nourish the dragon. But eventually the dragon hatches by ripping itself through the womb and out the stomach, a la Aliens, and killing the witch.
See, that's the downside.
Now, someone might be hearing this and go, well, fuck it, I'm just not going to eat dragon meat, then this is stupid. Well, if you don't get enough dragon meat and blood in your body, you go insane. So, no matter what choice you make, you are doomed to die in some manner. It is a very cursed existence.
Maybe it's just from a life of, like, mental difficulty, but I would say I would rather be insane than exploded.
Honestly, I feel like I would too, but given the way they portray it in this game, the madness may as well be death. So,
win.
But at the onset of this game, the main character Zeffy, mortally wounded by a dragon, and is rescued by two nearby witches that feed him dragon blood, and essentially it heals him, but also turns him into the world's first male witch. Of course, as you can probably guess, there are some complications there, but don't worry. It happens. It is what it is. And now he shares the fate as once being a former soldier that hunted witches. Now he shares the fate with those witches themselves, and that over time they are all fated to die, unless something happens which allows them to break the curse that causes this to happen. And that is the main driving force of the game's narrative. You and your witch companions are on a quest to alleviate the dragon's curse and save your souls or yourselves from this fate. Now, talk about the actual gameplay of the game. Now that I've laid out the narrative, this game takes place like a typical Compileheart game in that, you go to different dungeons and you can explore the dungeons, use a skill that allows you to sometimes see hidden items and pick them up, which, by the way, I wish companies would stop doing that shit. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's just pointless. But it doesn't make me hate the game. I just hate that mechanic. So there's like basic dungeon exploration, where you can also hit enemies from the back or the front and you initiate combat. However, the combat to me is probably where this game's most unique element starts to shine and what I like about the game the most.
Unique.
Christ, drink everybody, drink. When you get into combat takes place on three planes because everyone in this game flies, including the enemies. It leads to some pretty hilarious scenarios where they, typical Compileheart game recycles enemies, including enemies that have no business flying like frogs, but they fly in this game because that's the gameplay system. So three planes, each at different levels, and your characters and the enemies can reside on any of these planes. Attacks can be used that can either go out across a plane, single target, or across multiple planes, all depending on the attack you use. And there are three types of attacks. Physical attacks, magic attacks, magic, and devour attacks. Devour attacks are particularly special because, in addition to doing damage, they all have the potential to consume the enemy. When you defeat an enemy by way of eating them through a devour skill, you consume their core, which gives you a new set of nodes, which can be activated.
Somebody say nodes?
Which can be activated using accumulated no factor kidding. Points to get can be activated using factor points to give yourself new attacks, new skills, new devour skills, or passive abilities, which can be equipped to give yourself stat boosts and the like. So that ends up becoming a pretty addictive gameplay loop, because there's something fun about seeing a new enemy, which means that means it's a new enemy that you can eat to get new skills and such like that. And even if the abilities and skills aren't particularly like robust in their visual splendor or whatever, I still like collecting attacks and skills through this devour mechanic. It's just a fun way to power up your characters. Now, here comes the sad part of the game, or the rough part. And not in that it's a bad game, just like it's just more like the Soul Cannon thing we talked about earlier. In that, and this is to your main party members, there are a few little girls hidden back at the den that your characters are taking care of. These three girls, or four girls, or five girls, I want to say a bunch of them because I'm not going to tell you how many there are, need to be taken care of in the form of being fed as you progress through the game. You are on a time schedule throughout this game after around chapter three or so, in that when you go on expeditions and come back to town, these girls are hungry and they need to eat and they need to be talked to, like nurtured like. And if you don't feed them, well, they lose their shit. And if you feed them too much, they become dragons, go out into the field. You have to find them and kill them. And it's pretty freaking
sick. What the fuck is going on? Am I having a stroke?
Nope, just good old-fashioned child murder. But no, thankfully, just like with the Soul Cannon, if you play your cards right, you can protect these good girls and save them from a horrible fate of madness or dragonization. And that's actually part of, that's kind of what makes the gameplay loop what it is that, unlike a lot of other games, they discourage you from grinding, because the more you grind, the more, you know, more hungry they get, which requires you to feed them, which means they get closer to giving birth to a dragon. So you can't stay out too long, which is funny because there's also side quests you can do, which involve sometimes grinding. But if you're smart, you won't do that. Though the sad part is, if they do become dragons and you hunt them and kill them, you get cool perks and items. Why would you do that, you freaking monster? So, something worth noting there. So, I honestly find this game to be good. One thing worth noting, though, is that I did play this on PS4 originally, and now I'm playing it on the Switch. And the graphical visuals, there is a very notable difference in quality drop. Because, well, you're coming from a PS4 designed game to a Switch port. With that said, honestly, after the first dungeon, I stopped caring. I like playing it on the Switch more than the PS4. Basically, what that implies is that if you're not a graphic hound, and you're okay with just the way the game looks, and as far as its art direction and stuff, and the game and the narrative and the gameplay loop and all, you'll be fine. It's not going to kill you. And honestly, if you were looking to buy it on the PS4 for the graphical quality, you probably would have already done so because it's been on PS4. So as far as like, I have a Switch, should I play this game on the Switch? I think you'd be fine to do so, because I've been enjoying it just fine on the Switch, despite the graphical drop. It's a good narrative. I like this particular studio's games. These are also the guys who did Death End Request, which for anybody who's listened, knows I'm a big fan of the Death End Request games. Galapagos is good at what they do, and I hope Compile Heart goes to them to make more games, because they work, they rule. And honestly, there's a little bit of fan service in here in regards to some of the dragon transformation that you can get into in combat scenarios. But one, I generally don't care about fan service, but for folks who do get a little anxious about fan service, it's one of them you can hit a trigger button and skip it. So it's not even a big deal. You can just walk right past it. I like the game. It's good.
Well, $30. What is your verdict?
I think this is another quality case of buy, especially if you like Compile Heart games. This is amongst their better RPGs, I believe. So
cool.
This is a good time.
My favorite is still Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force.
Well, wasn't that Idea Factory, though?
That was. I didn't mean Galapagos, but it was Compile Heart Idea Factory.
I guess that's true. Their whole thing, they're like together in a way where it's like it's hard to even tell sometimes.
I was going to say, yeah, Joe said Idea Factory in the intro.
Honestly, I hear them, I'm like...
Thank you. Thank you, Chris, for paying attention.
Always. I never pay attention to you!
Never! It's cookie.
But not
anyway, you moving on, we got something crazy to talk about. We got a Vita game to discuss.
Very official.
What?
That's right, people. A PS Vita game just released. A couple of them just released, actually. We're going to talk about one of them. Witchcrafty, developed by Pigeon Dev, published by Sometimes You, released July 20th on the Vita for $4.99. Something Strange is Happening in the Kingdom.
It's so cheap.
The forests are filled with predatory plants. Their peace-loving peoples have taken up arms against each other, and goblins were noticed in the deep mines. The little witch has to start her journey in search of truth and answers. Who is behind all these events? Should you trust strangers along the way? Who stole the witch's mail? Or maybe all is not what it seems? Tim, tell us about Witchcrafty.
Man, it's only $5.
Yep.
It sucks. I really wanted this to be like a heartwarming story of like some, random game coming out at when the Vita's been long dead and gone. And it's like, check out what the Vita's got. You got to play this game on the Vita before it comes to anything else. But unfortunately, Witchcrafty had other ideas.
He's gold blooming already.
Yeah, the gimmick of this game is bills itself as a Metroidvania platform, a level based Metroidvania, which in practice means it's not a Metroidvania. It's just a level based platformer that has a few like side rooms and alternate paths. It's not like, genre distinctions are kind of, always ridiculous, but it's like I would feel a core tenet of that particular genre as it exists is that, like, you are in a one contiguous world, you will find places you cannot get to, and later you will find items that will let you get to those places. Kind of feels generally how that is meant to play out, in my humble opinion. But in this game, you just go through the levels, and then once you get to the end of a level, you get dropped into the next level. It's not really... Don't see the word Metroidvania and then check out the look at this game and be like, oh man, I want to play this. I want to play this Metroidvania, because you will not get a Metroidvania. I do think like the look of the game is actually quite good. I really like the animations and like how the enemies look and how your character looks and how she animates. And I think, the backgrounds of each level, while, it's drawing from the same tile set, like it looks good. That's not like a deal breaker or anything to me. My first red flag with this game, as it is with many games that comes up, is when characters start talking and the grammar is terrible, and I'm like, it's just always a bad sign for me. And like I don't know where this was developed. I assume this is not an English-speaking country, just by the way the sentences are constructed, and I know English is a motherfucker of a language, but it's just like, it is honestly, it's not good, but it like kind of is transcendently bad to where it's funny. in just like, you'll read these sentences and I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like just random articles splayed about, and not every sentence is like that, which is what threw me off at first and made me feel like, Maybe it was just a couple of bad lines, but there's just, I don't. Okay, so I actually took a screenshot of one just because I had to remember how weird this is. This isn't even like a particular bad one. It is just weird. So your witches run into it's a cat. I'm talking to a cat here. And I believe she's talking to herself in this particular line where she says, "I don't know if I can trust him, comma, but his plan is clearly better than mine, comma, which does not exist." I think that's funny. Clearly better than my plan, which does not exist. But there's more with just like, it's just whatever. It's besides the point. When you're actually getting to playing the game, that's where the deal breaks for me. So you have a melee attack with a very it has a short range, but the range is slightly bigger than it looks like it is. Like the hitbox is a little bit bigger, but it's still pretty short. Your character can take two hits and has no invincibility. So boy, can you die fast in some of these screens. It's just like enemies will just run into you and just like boom, boom, you're gone. You will. Sometimes you will drop onto a screen right on top of an enemy. There are these fire goblin dudes that like launch three homing fireballs, but you know, they track on your last known location. Then it's a line across the screen. It's like, well, you get hit by two other fireballs and you're dead because there's no invincibility, and it makes it hard and not in like that fun, hard way. It's just like, what are you doing? No. I don't quite understand. And it gives you, like, as you go through the levels, you will find magical powers, which pretty much just amount to shoot a different elemental ball in front of you, which is fine. And your magic regenerates, like, after you kill an enemy or two. There is not a map. You know, you guys like your maps. So it's like they have... I'm so confused by like a lot of what's going on in the game because it's billing itself as a Metroidvania, but like the only, like there will be hidden, one of the things that can be hidden, mostly it's currency, but sometimes there's like a piece of heart that, you know, if you find three of them, it'll extend your heart meter, or like a piece of the magic meter and it will extend your magic meter, but they're so few and far between. Like it's not a long game. It's only handful of levels long, and they have like a little shop where you can buy one of those extra pieces, but it seems like there's maybe one of them per level. So if you don't have enough, and it's a decent amount of currency you need, it's like 250 of these crystal things that you need in order to actually buy it. Like it's one of those things like with that Fallen Knight game where it's like by the time you have enough currency to start making progress in upgrading your character, like the game's already over. But there's just like weird glitchiness to it too. Like, especially when it comes to, they have a mechanic for, you know, how most games, platformers where they have platforms that you can jump down through. How do you jump down through that platform? You press down in the jump button, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty normal, pretty standard. Here you have to hit down twice, but there's like this twist, that it does not explain. So it's not really a twist so much as I think it's kind of a bug. Is if you're dropping down through multiple platforms, you can't drop straight down, because when you drop down to a platform, like I think it sinks you in to that platform a little bit, and when you try to tap double down again, you won't go. So you have to move a little bit to the left or right in order to go down. But also, sometimes there's spots where you will, if you land on like a solid floor, you will just be stuck. And you will essentially soft lock the game and you have to reset.
Oh, that's
to
fun.
Go back. No, it's not actually, Joe. It's not fun. I don't know what kind of things you find fun in fucking video games. If you're like, ooh, it's soft lock. 10 out of 10 game of the year. No.
Hey, Cole likes doing that.
Oh, okay.
I do break shit regularly.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, checkpoints are pretty far between, so when you have one of those random, like, dropped into a room and, you know, get fuckered on suddenly deaths, it's like, oh god, I have to go through all that other stuff again. And, like, I was trying really hard to like this game, you know, and really enjoy it. Oh, I lied. There is a map there. But, like, you know, you're still going from one end of the level to the other, and the levels aren't very big, and the story is incomprehensible, and, like, I'm dying all the time for things that are out of my control, or sometimes getting stuck in floors and just not feeling great about moving around. Anyways, you also get a dash and, like, an air dash. When you're on the ground, it does, like, a roll type thing, which is okay. It's just, like, the thing, like, you need more health, and you need to, like, work out the kinks in your collision with your character's feet going into floors. And then you'd have probably, like, it wouldn't be a Metroidvania game, but you'd have, like, a solid little, you know, 2D platformer with, like, a little bit of exploration off to the side. But otherwise, just like, what's...
So smooth out the rough edges, and there's potential, because it is going to be coming to other platforms eventually.
Yes, just please fix the little things. It's only $5. It would be so easy to recommend if it wasn't broken in those ways.
Well, as it is at $5, what is your verdict?
You should not even buy it for $5, because it's just not good in its current state. They even just give your character a little bit of invincibility, like work out the thing with clipping through the floors and into the floors, and then it's easy. It's like, okay, solid game, $5, go nuts, especially on the Vita when you don't got much coming out. Like, Vita people are probably already bought it. They're like, oh my god, something showed up on my store.
Yeah, it's one of the final games to release on the Vita.
So I
think they are done. No, I think Sony has officially ended submissions.
Stopped for licensing the Vita store. Game. Oh, okay, yeah. Fair enough.
I think that's officially one of the final games. But Tim, that is it for you. We'll let you get going.
Bedtime. Yay! Time to go shoot my kid's soul out of cannon.
Yay! Do you have any final words?
No, I'll catch you guys next week when I'll actually play that other game I need to review on Steam. It's a rhythm game. I think Souls is in the name of it. Is it?
Yes.
Yes.
A rhythm game with the word Souls in it?
Yeah, God damn it, another fucking Souls game. Beat Souls, that's what I gotta play. Beat
Souls.
Yeah.
From Software.
I mean, it's not from. It does have a demo, though, so you don't even need to listen to me, really. It's gonna get one of those half-assed reviews. Nah, I'm kidding, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be great, but it does have a demo. Yeah, I'll be playing that for next week. Mark my words. I just didn't have enough time this past weekend because I was playing fucking Pokemon trading card game with my child. That was literally probably like 4 hours of my day on Saturday. I was like, what the hell happened to me here?
Just Pokemon cards.
Yeah. Yes. Well, the day opened. Now you're getting my tangent. Welcome.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Hope you're ready. So this is going to be a little bit heart wrenching. So he hasn't really been into the game yet. He's accrued a few cards just from, like, giveaways, you know, here and there, like McDonald's. Here's some cards. When he went to see the Pikachu movie, he got a pack of cards. So he's had, like, a few cards. And then on Friday, one of his friends at the summer camp thing that he goes to gave him like 6 or 7 cards that he had duplicates of. So he was like so excited. He's like suddenly got all these cards. He was having so much fun with them Friday. Saturday morning, like, you know, I'm trying not to wake up desperately. But, you know, he gets up and I hear him go downstairs. And I'm like, okay, well, it's Neville now. So I get up and I go downstairs and he comes up to me after I get out of the bathroom. He's just like, really quietly, like, Dad, I ruined my Pokemon cards. I'm like, what happened, buddy? He's like, I dropped them in my pee. I'm like, you dropped them in the toilet? He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, where are they now? I threw them out. I'm like, did you wash your hands? Yeah. So he's had these cards with him. And, you know, a lot of times when he goes to the bathroom, like, he has something in his hand. This is just a thing kids do. I'm sure Cole's familiar.
It's 100% a thing kids do.
100% thing kids do. And I'm always like, buddy, okay, before you go to the bathroom, put the thing down. Like, put the cards down, put the car down, put the toy down, then go to the bathroom. And this is why. In his Saturday morning, like, drowsiness, whatever he did when he went to go to the bathroom, he had the cards in his hand and he dropped them into the toilet bowl. And he was heartbroken. He just starts bawling. And I'm like, okay, buddy. Well, we're going to do our stuff. We'll go drop by Target and see if they have any Pokemon cards there. It's like, okay. So we go to Target, and they don't have any Pokemon cards because you have fucking idiots that are our age buying them all up to sell on eBay. I've actually seen cards in Target more recently. I think some of the craze has died down a little bit.
Every time Ashley and I are at GameStop for longer than 10 minutes, someone's in there. Do you have Pokemon cards?
Yeah, but they do have this Battle Academy game, which is like a starter box, which, you know, teaches kids how to play the game, and it comes with like 3 simple decks. So like I bought that, and that is, so now he knows how to play the game, all told. And then the next day I took him to like a local shop because I knew they would have like a bunch of just fucking old random cards sitting in boxes, for cheap. And I was not wrong. And they gave, and he got a bunch of them and was very happy about that. And some they didn't charge him for. And they actually did have packs of Pokemon cards there and some of the new decks. So we didn't buy any of them. We bought some other stuff, but, yeah. And anyways, the moral of the story is that he had a great weekend, at the end, despite the tragedies of Saturday morning. We played a bunch of Pokemon card game. He got a bunch of random Pokemon cards just to fart around with. They gave him some, you know, card slip covers, just gave them to him. They're just like, here you go, kid, to protect his cards.
So he doesn't pee on them?
Well, he can still pee on them. Some things are inevitable. With children, it is that their waste will end up on things that you don't want them on.
True.
So, you know, he got some random cards to just kind of play around with and look at and play his own little battles in his head. And he has the actual game where he can, you know, that he's learning how to play with me. But that involves me being involved in playing a lot of Pokemon. And anyway, that's why I haven't reviewed that game yet.
Shout out for you to actually learn how to play the game, though. I was just like, go ask your sisters to play with you. Because number 3 recently was gifted some Pokemon cards, and she was over the moon thrilled. But then she's like, okay, now tell me how to play. And I'm like, no, that's why I gave you siblings. So.
Yeah, exactly. You have 1, 2, and 3. I have merely 1. So somebody has the
first and second mistake.
Yeah. But I do enjoy playing it, and yeah, I do heartily recommend that Battle Academy box for getting someone started in the Pokemon trading
game. That's what I'm looking toward to getting her next, because she wants more for Christmas than her birthday. She got a Chilling Rain starter box.
Yeah.
They pulled 2 crazy ass expensive cards. One was a super rare, and the other one was like a Shadow Rider Calyrex with foil, and I'm like, okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah, jeez. it was wild. I was like, okay, I don't know what any of this shit is. Have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. can we retire off this card? No? Not yet. Okay.
Yes, can we retire?
We.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, anyway, that's as far as my tangent will go.
Cool.
All right. Catch you guys later.
Have a good night, man.
Lasers.
Oh, man. All right. We got to move on. Next game to talk about is called Death Trash, developed and published by Crafting Legends, released August 5th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Death Trash features a post-apocalyptic world where cosmic horrors long for humanity, but meet punks with shotguns. It combines old-school role-playing, modern action gameplay, and player freedom. Create your own character and explore a handcrafted world. Chris, tell us about your time with Death Trash.
Okay, why not? All right, so Death Trash is, yeah, it's an exploration game with a kind of an isometric 2D look, so it might remind you of, like, I don't know, Diablo or something. I don't have a lot of references to to that, but it also, what they mean by modern gameplay is that you can roll away from enemies, because that's the thing that they all do. Fortunately, it's not like that's not a huge part of the thing, and plus you can only roll so much, you run out of energy eventually. No, that's burying the lead. What this game is about is that you are a, you're a character who has been banished from civilization, essentially. You have some kind of illness that you don't know what it is, But it has gotten you banned from society, and so you are forced into the outside world where you must survive. And if you try to re-enter society or reproduce, then you explode and die.
Nice. So that's,
yeah, it's all about kind of figuring out who you are, and definitely don't get laid by strangers in bars, because you will die. There are consequences. And plus, you know, just don't do that anyway. We're in COVID now, you know, it's like, this is, you gotta get serious.
Yeah, wear a mask.
Yeah, wear a mask. And I say your character carefully, because actually, you, even though you go through an entire character creator process, there's no options for gender. Further than that, as far as I can tell, there are no pronouns either. You are just, my character's name was Hot Pants, and I got them to look a little bit like Alan Rickman in the Harry Potter films. And so that's the character I had rolling around and tumbling around. You quickly find out in the, well, you have an optional kind of tutorial dungeon to go through where you learn all about like opening doors. And most importantly, you learn that you can make your character puke on command. You just push the F button at any point and your character will puke on the floor. And then you can pick it up, and you need to use it as a quote-unquote biologic lubricant for a machine, because some machines, I guess, run on that. And therein, you start to see, oh, this game is a little bit odd. And then on your way out of the first dungeon, you run into the Flesh Kraken, which is a... So most of the planet that you live on in the outside world is just piles of gore. That is to say, piles of just skinless muscle and brains and guts and just flesh, you know? No explanation. It's just coming, like, out of the rocks. Well, I mean, I'm sure eventually you get an explanation, but the Flesh Kraken is, like, the side of a tree. It's in one of the preview images, but it's in this one of the sides of the tree. It's just this culmination of flesh that has taken on a life and consciousness of its own and looks like a giant octopus, but an octopus made of gore. It's very Cronenberg, this game. But instead of fighting it, you have to find it friends, because it has gained a consciousness but doesn't have any friends, and it really wants some. So, you know, like, that's another thing that makes this game a little bit unusual. It's actually kind of heartwarming, like, because on top of like doing quests to like kind of help people find their humanity in a very inhuman place, you even have empathy as a stat, and certain dialogue options with other people are locked away if you don't have the proper empathy, which is kind of one thing about this game. They do say that it has all this freedom, but I noticed that you know, you do kind of shoot yourself in the foot, figuratively speaking, if you, let's say, don't raise your gun levels, like, early on, because as soon as you find a gun, that becomes the only thing that basically does damage, because the only other thing you find in the tutorial dungeon is a stick. And, me, I raised my melee damage with a blade, and I never found a blade, and then, you know, I raised my empathy level a little bit and my strength and all this other stuff. I raised nothing that would help me out with guns or occult, quote unquote, which is basically the magic in this game, shooting lightning out of your fingers and stuff, you know, Jedi stuff. And but, you know, you could still survive. It's very much like if you get in range of enemies, then they start coming after you, and then you have to like get away from them or get killed. And some enemies explode when you kill them, and then that can kill you too. You can also set up chain reactions and stuff. And enemies drop meat and guts and machine parts and stuff. And the way that you heal yourself in the game is to just eat that meat, that raw meat that you sometimes find on the ground. So this game is an interesting combination of things. It's like, it's a genuinely really nice to look at game that tries to be as ugly as it possibly can, but the sprite work is so good. The sprite work's amazing, and it's ugly, and it's just, it's beautiful in its ugliness. It's a game about like post-apocalyptic like kind of isolation and stuff like that, but it's all about making friends and like and caring about people. And you know, it's like yeah, it's a game that like you want to take seriously, but then you can just press F and make your character puke. Like, there's so much
contradiction. The Steam page has a nice animated picture of the flesh octopus.
Yeah, flesh kraken.
Flesh kraken, that's it.
Flesh kraken. He has a name.
Sorry.
Anyway.
My apologies to the flesh kraken.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Black.
So, yeah, you basically, you know, you explore as you go around areas, you know, it highlights a certain, like, wall, and if you click on that or, you know, push the button on that, then it takes you to a larger overworld map where you can kind of warp to the next quadrant. So it's not totally open movement. It's like there's definitely, like, areas to explore on a map. But it's genuinely really compelling. As soon as you get like kind of used to the different modes of combat and you gain a couple of levels and unlock enough, you know, stuff that you can do, yeah, you really start to get going, and it's a fascinating game.
Cool. Well, it is in early access right now. They are saying that they plan to be in early access about a year, but if it takes longer to make a good game, then they're going to take as long as they need. Yeah, sure. They say that the game initially starts off with the first chapter, and they're going to gradually add more to the story through the early access period and save, you know, the final part of the story for the official release. They are not going to be pricing it any differently. So $20 on this one. Is this worth jumping in now? Is it worth throwing on a wish list? Is it something we should ignore? What do you think?
So I'm trying to remember, does it have a demo too, or is it just early access?
I believe it's just early access. I don't see it.
Okay, yeah, I was looking at something else. Never mind. Okay, well,
oh wait, no, it does say download demo.
Okay. It does have a demo. So it has a little demo. You could try that. I certainly think that my what would you say, figurative $20 is well spent on this game. I'm looking forward to it fully coming out, and you know, it's got enough in it right now that I think it's worth jumping into, but you know, it's I think early access purchases tend to be for, like, you know, people who are very sure that this is the thing that they want already.
Yeah.
But and that's the thing, is I've never played anything like this before, so I didn't even know until I put my hands on it whether I'd like it. I'd say for my money, it's a buy it. And of course, you know, if you want to wait for the full version, then, you know, go right on ahead. You know, it helps the developer, obviously, that they get customers now, but yeah. I think it's really compelling, and it's more than meets the eye, and what meets the eye is already a bit much. So, yeah, I like it.
Cool. All right, next game to talk about is Deadly Days, developed by Pixel Split, published by Assemble Entertainment, released August 3rd on Xbox One for $18.99. Deadly Days is a unique strategic roguelite in the zombie apocalypse. Manage and protect a group of survivors and help them to stop the catastrophe. Discover and use a large number of wild and crazy objects, even wilder and crazy survivors, special abilities, and deadly weapons. Cole, tell us about your time with Deadly Days.
I died.
What?
I know, that's a shocker, right? Yeah, so this is a roguelite, but it's also roguelike. But it's also a strategy game with a little bit, I don't want to say it's twin stick because it's not, but like it's got a top down exploratory phase to it as well. And you can use the face buttons to kind of make some extra shit happen. So obviously, if it wasn't like glaringly obvious, I guess it's a zombie game. You're trying to survive in the apocalypse. You get a couple random survivors every time you start. They have a little pokey ass base, and they got a little pokey ass school bus, and it pokes its way wherever you tell it to go every day. When you start the day, you press Y, and then you'll get a couple of options that kind of show up like a card system, if you will. They'll be color coded to let you know, like, green is obviously easier, red is obviously harder, purple is you will get your face fucked off as you do. And so you'll choose, you know, which path you want to go. The the cards are for different types of situations. Like one may be for searching or scavenging a hospital. One may be for scavenging a warehouse or for looking for survivors or just different little scenarios that it comes up with. There aren't a whole lot of scenarios to choose from. It's pretty limited, but that actually kind of helps because the game can get overwhelming. If there were too many different scenarios, there would just be a point where you'd be like, fuck this, I'm out. at least when you're looking at the cards between the color coding and the different, the limited scenarios, you know what you're looking for. The funny part of it is that primarily what you want to look for are burger restaurants, because that's how the virus is being spread. And you need to collect fragments of maps by looting 5 different burger restaurants throughout your run. Once you've collected your map fragments, you can then go to the burger factory and fight the big boss.
This all seems way too real.
It's pretty funny, to be honest. And it's like they're injecting the cows with some kind of neon green goo. It's just, it's exactly what you think it is. And it's delightful. but yeah, if you make it to the factory, kudos to you. This is one of those instances where, despite being a roguelike and despite dying really fucking fast, you do gain permanent progress. There are 3 different types of classes, if you will. So one is like more of a brawler type of setup where you'll get active and passive perks that are geared toward, strength loadouts, if you will. Where there's, I forget what the second one is. The second one has stuff like copy your best weapon every day or something like that. And then the third one is like a medic type of loadout, which is the one that I decided was just perfect for me because I was dying a lot. Each different loadout set or specialization or whatever you want to refer to it as, each different specialization has a series of items in its own unlock bar. So the more you play that specific class, the more you'll unlock items that are better and better, and then you'll survive longer while you're using that class. Unfortunately, though, that means if you're running the medic class and nothing but, and then you swap over to the brawler class, you're starting from scratch and you're probably going to die a lot for a while. The perk to that is that at least you know which ones to avoid when it comes to the cards, and you don't accidentally click the purple when you only have one dude with a knife. You do need to customize your characters. Not quite RPG-wise, you do level them up with food. You have to collect food, or your motherfuckers will die. If you don't have enough food to feed everybody that you're packing on that bus every day, somebody's just going to randomly fall over and die of starvation. That's a hard way to lose a group. Take it from me. I thought I was doing great. This is a great run! I didn't notice I was low on food. People just started dropping like slices.
That'll get you every time.
I was really focused on getting to the burger factory. And then I got there and I only had 2 people left. So you have to be careful. You can't just go save every motherfucker that pops up on a card. You're like, oh, it's brilliant to have an extra survivor because then, that's an extra gun. That's an extra perk or whatever little special ability they come with. Some of them can heal. There's one dude with a pumpkin for a head who just randomly throws his head every 20 seconds and it blows up. There's a baby who just follows you around with a fart cloud every so many seconds. there's a lot of chaotic energy happening with the characters here. But if you can't feed them, you're just putting your other characters at risk. And I'll tell you what, the game says it's random when it picks who dies. It will always pick whoever has the highest fucking level or the best fucking gun. It is never that level 2 baby man or the level 4 chicken man who falls over and dies. It's always level 35 ninja with a katana and every time. It's never Chicken Man. Chicken Man lives forever and he don't fucking deserve it. He doesn't do anything fancy. And he lays an egg every so many seconds. I think it is, and the egg blows up. Anyway.
Well, Chicken Man doesn't deserve being alive, but does Deadly Days, that worth the $18.99 price tag?
You know, the sad part is I feel like I haven't even touched on a whole lot of the game. So absolutely, yes, there is plenty of content here. You're going to be playing and replaying until your hands fall off. And even if you do succeed and you beat the Burger Factory or you build a rocket ship and get off the fucking planet, if you win your run, one, you're going to want to do it again because, you know, you want to see if you have skills or if it's a fluke. And two, it's a fluke. There's a daily run. And you can keep challenging yourself every day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice. So has your stamp of approval?
Yes, very much so.
Cool.
Buy it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Armed Emeth, developed by Hitpoint, published by Kemco, released August 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Windows 10 for $14.99. Valis, a boy earning petty cash in a commune of drifters, is suddenly met by Locke, a standalone golem. Upon discovering that the leader of a criminal organization has an enormous bounty on his head, Valis receives a golem of his own from Locke and decides to join him on an adventure into the unknown where numerous bounties await. Thus begins their journey of grit and oil across several continents. Chris, tell us about your time with Armed Emeth.
Okay, well, this is another Kemco RPG, which, you know, those are released very frequently with alarming frequency honestly and you know seemingly you know on the dot but this one is one of the rarer ones that is actually developed by Hitpoint, they make my favorite Kemco games, Legend of the Tetrarchs, Monster Viator, Crystal Orta, and Cristorino is an older one. So this is like their newest one. Now, as opposed to here's the thing, is that Kemco RPGs are very cookie cutter. Whether it's the Hitpoint ones or the X-Create ones, and that's fine because I mean they all start off as like mobile RPGs, you know, they're just kind of like cannon fodder for folks who just can't stop playing RPGs ever, which is me, because I love all of them. And, but you know, I am aware of the frequency at which they come out and all this other stuff. But what I like about Hitpoint is that, even though their games mostly look alike, you know, they do try some different things. And actually this game, is quite different than the previous three, which are the first three games that I mentioned. So those games usually take place, like battles would take place in like a first person mode where you have your four characters and you basically kind of chain together different special skills. They're not based on MP, they're based on a constantly refilling, you know, or refilling every turn, SP kind of like ability point system. So this game is a little bit like that, but it's presented in third person, in a kind of isometric view. So it looks a little bit like Suikoden or something, but with a split in the screen, which is very odd. It doesn't seem like it needs to be there, but it still does it. And, the other thing is that, like, your characters, you know, this game is, it's RPG-ish, but it's also, like, sci-fi, and your characters mostly deal with guns. I mean, they say golem, but they're basically robots. And, you know, in that sense, you are basically firing guns that have a cooldown period. And it's one of those things where it's, like, you can use your special attack, which doesn't take any points or anything like that, but it has a 4-turn cooldown, you know, or something like that. or you can use your primary weapon, which makes you, which you have, you can only use every other turn, or your backup weapon, which you can use every turn, but it's weaker. So it's all about, just like the previous games, it's all about balancing what attacks you can do in that particular turn, because you've already like expended like something or other and you have to wait. But it's presented in like this brand new way. And another thing is that you have two different types of characters. You have the humans who will join, and you know, on top of Valis, and then you have golems that will join, and they have all kinds of different needs. So the humans have separate healing items than the golems, and as far as I could tell, I think the humans actually, yeah, like they have a whole different equipment set. They have all this other different stuff. They're upgraded in different ways, you know, through levels up rather than, you know, tinkering, which is, you know, a way that you can improve like your golems and stuff. Some of the golems are robots. Some of them are suits, like kind of mechs that you equip. And it's really all very cool. It's like, it's another level of complexity, but it's easy to get into and it's really fascinating. And of course, it's cool robots, so you know who can complain. Now the
True.
Oh, true. I thought you were naming somebody that could complain.
Oh no, the robots like, who can complain. Yeah, fuck you, Drew.
Yeah, damn it, Drew. He hates robots. I mean, what kind of soulless person? Anyways, so
load him into the cannon.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing that differentiates this game from the other hit point games, yet makes it a little bit more like an X Create game. It has two versions of money. So it has like the regular money that you get in the game, which we'll get to in a minute. That actually does play into this game a lot more than the previous ones. But you also get these other points that can be spent in a shop outside of the game, essentially, to get yourself like some you know, good items. Now, you can't gamble with them. There's no gambling aspect to this. And there's a little bit of a strategy to getting these parts. Like it's basically upgrade parts for different golems that you can get for the most part. And they're pretty cheap. But every 200 or so, you can pick yourself up something that will add 100% more money to your character at the end of battles, or 50% more experience. So normally those are external purchases that they put in these games. But you can actually earn them in the game, and you can purchase them outside the game, of course. But money is actually necessary in this game because, so I said there were special attacks, regular, you know, primary weapons and secondary weapons. Well, the special attacks for golems only are not just you can use it and then it has a cooldown period like it is for humans and their mechs. It is actually, they fire ammunition, like, and those, that ammunition is their special. However, that ammunition has to be purchased. So, and the other thing is that if you want to heal your golems, like humans can go to the inn and get healed up for very cheap, but golems have to, you actually have to access these pods in town to restore the BP of your golems. Otherwise, they'll just keep getting killed and then reviving at the end of the battle with one HP. So it's unlike the last two games in that your characters don't get fully healed after every battle. You actually do have to maintain them in the outer map. So having said, the game is basically like the other hit point games. You know, you just go from town to town, location to location, talk to people, you know, get the plot and, you know, get quests and side quests. And of course, there are bounties, like a lot of these kind of games. And those, you got those in Monster Viator and Crystal Orta as well. It's just, there's special random encounters that you can find for like fabulous prizes, but they're a little bit harder. They're fun to do. And, you know, really, and of course, the graphics, the sprite art's fantastic. And of course, there are ponchos. that's the hit point mascot. It's like a slime, but it has the face of kind of a bird, like a chick. So those are here and in full force too. There's like three different kinds of ponchos I fought in the first area alone. it's getting ridiculous. The only thing I would say is that it is hard sometimes to figure out where you need to go, even though it has a running like journal of like, storyline stuff that you're keeping up with. It might say, you know, if I go south of this town, I could end up in the central continent. but it doesn't give you a location, and there's no spot on the map to tell you where to go, and you just kind of have to wander around until there's a town or something, you know? Yeah. It's a little old school Dragon Quest in that way, which I've only had that happen to me a couple of times in the other games, but it happens a little more frequently in this one, so, you know, keep your eyes and ears open for location names and places and stuff when you're playing through this one. But yeah.
Well, as it stands, $15 on this one, like all the other Chemco RPGs. What do you think of it?
Well, like all the Hit Point ones, I absolutely say buy it, and I will in fact be looking for this to come out on the Switch so that I can pay money for this and download and play it that way. Even though they do provide us with codes, it's always for Windows 10, so I always end up spending money on them myself anyway because I always like to play them on Switch.
And, hey, but they come to Xbox first, so that's the platform we cover them on.
Yeah, no, I love Hit Point games. They're very imaginative. The stories aren't super epic, but at least they're like interesting, and it's always worth getting all the way through the game. I was very pleased. I've beaten 2 of the 4 so far, and I'm working on Crystal Orta pretty soon. So yeah, I'd say yeah, it's a buy it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Super Hiking League DX, developed by Bit Inc. Studios, published by Cubebyte Interactive, released August 10th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $4.99. Join Nelson in the Super Hiking League. An evil wizard is making mountains disappear in a plan to make the world perfectly flat. As a member of the Super Hiking League, you will not let this happen. Compete in climbing matches against other hikers to collect all magic gems and stop his plans. Ernell, what the hell is this game?
Apparently this evil wizard is trying to turn their world into Delaware, but we got to stop him. So, honestly, it's going to be one of my shorter reviews for this episode, thankfully. Not to say that the game is bad, it's just this is a very concise game. You are a team of hikers. Well, you're one of the hikers. And the general gist of the game is mainly played in the arcade mode, which consists of you going from level to level and performing what would be known as, what could be considered as like a vertical racing game. Because every level, whether you're playing the arcade mode or the eventual versus mode, which you'll be doing stages on via unlocked stages from arcade mode, you will be going up against opponents to go from the bottom of the screen to the top of the screen and collecting the gem that floats above the map. How do you traverse the map? Well, run left to right, obviously, and you can jump. But the key mechanic to Super Hiking League is a grapple mechanic, where you can throw the grappling hook either like diagonally left to right or straight up. And then once it's connected to the grapple point, which are represented by like floating flowers, you kind of get like a sort of a bungee scenario going where you can kind of like pull yourself down and then launch yourself up. And if you hit the button at just the right time, you'll get like a super launch where you just go extra high up into the screen or whatnot. So when you're trying to beat your opponent, whether it be a human or a ghost character for races on the arcade mode, that's going to play a very major point in getting around. Now, you can not only make traversal moves, you can also attack people too. There's a button that lets you swing. For whatever reason, these guys have swords. Don't ask why. I couldn't tell you. But they can use their swords to attack opponents or the occasional enemy, usually in the form of slimes that exist on the map. You can't die in this game. Whether you get hit by an enemy or by an opponent, it just kind of stuns you slightly and knocks you backwards. So it's more of a hindrance to kind of like push each other out of the way as you're rushing from the top of the screen. All the maps in this game are fairly, like, none of them are too big. Like, you can finish a run on a map in like 30 seconds at a time, generally. And then it's 2 rounds. Like, basically, the first to get 2 wins clears it. But that doesn't make it a bad thing at all. It makes for some very quick, intense matches. A very fun multiplayer scenario, in fact. And every time you beat a level in arcade mode, you unlock the next arcade mode stage for versus. And sometimes you'll also unlock a new member of the Super Hiking League, which you can use to select as a character you can select on the select screen for versus mode. Though they don't perform any differently. It's purely skin. But, hey. Kinds of games, that's all it's supposed to be about sometimes. You just want to be able to choose the character that resonates most with you to play with. All in all, I would say this has been a game that came out of nowhere for me. Like, I never heard of this game when you referred it to me. And I actually think it's pretty fun. I can see this making a good, like, you know, party game, like a round robin sort of thing, where you just kind of switch between one of the many stages the game has in this random or randomize the stage and just like race to the top, and then winner holds on, loser passes the controller around the room.
Oh, then $5 on this thing. What are you thinking about it?
I always want to call it fuck it, why not, but it more like it belies how much I thought the game was fun. So I kind of want to just say buy it in this case. Also worth knowing, the music is legit. I like the tunes in this game a bit, a lot too. They're classic-y 8-bit style.
Good stuff.
DX.
Good stuff, DX. All right, next up is Super Squidlet. Developed and published by Squidlet Inc., released July 30th on the Switch for $9.99. Super Squidlet imitates the Game Boy Color's capabilities and limitations for a squishy adventure. The colorful world of Squishu and its invertebrate inhabitants need your help. Play as Plip and your old foe Squit Squat as you sail to banish a great evil.
Good job.
Squit Squat.
Yeah.
Chris, tell us about Super Squidlet.
Okay, so Super Squidlet is, of course, the sequel to the hit game Squidlet, I assume. but yeah, basically you take control of a adorable little squid who lives in a squid town. Plip, I guess, is the name, yeah. And by the way, the company name is Squidlet Inc. I just got that ink. But anyways, so yeah, basically it, because it's a sequel, it tells you, essentially the whole plot of the first game, which of course the first game, it acts like a Game Boy game. It's all in green and stuff like that. And it jokes around, you know, has some Game Boy-y type jokes. Even like, references to like Zelda Link's Awakening and stuff is pretty great. Which I think I bought that game. I don't think I reviewed it or anything. Anyways, so this one similarly, the plot explanation. If you talk to a to one of the other squids in town, they're like, "How do you like those color contacts I just got you?" And then, you know, so you know the
explains the, squid the color.
Yeah, exactly, and. The previous game has a border on it that looks like a Game Boy, and this one has a color, like a Game Boy Color looking border. And if you push the R button, it switches between Game Boy Color colors, like, you know, yellow, blue, pink, all that other stuff. And of course, it has a little light that says juice on it. That, you know.
For the battery. Nice.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, in the plot of this game, you are teaming up with the final boss of the previous game, which is a big giant bug lady, who Squick Squawk or whatever. And she basically, when you defeated her, it released this giant evil upon the world, and now you kind of have to join forces to take the thing down. So, you know, but this character, the bad guy, basically just acts as an NPC that you occasionally run into, but she's kind of funny because she's, you know, a bad guy trying to do like the good thing. And, you know, it's again, this game is adorable. So, the way that the action works, it is an action platformer. It's basically go from one area to the next, and eventually you get to the end of the world, and then you sail on a ship to another island and, you know, do the exploring there. It's pretty simple, very straightforward. You get a few abilities in this one. So your primary ability is to jump and then do what is kind of a double jump, but it doesn't actually get you any more air. What happens is that Plip squirts ink down below, and then that is what, if that ink lands on an enemy, it gets rid of the enemy. So that's the attack. So basically the attack is to double jump over you know, various bugs and stuff. I forget what they're called, like ooblugs or something like that. And, you know, they're dangerous and violent, but also extremely weak to ink. you have your life, which is in the form of muffins. You get 3 muffins, and as you get hit, then, you know, it takes bites out of those muffins and stuff. And there's a muffin chef who, like, has a muffin cannon, and that's how they explain how there are muffins just kind of in places. And
at least they explain it. That, you know, they took the time. Yeah. I appreciate that.
And then there's And then there's like different abilities, like you got like a roll that if you run into a wall, it you gain a little bit of air. So like in that sense, you can kind of wall jump with it and you know, climb up walls if you're good at timing. And of course, that's going to get you the secret things like buttons, like, you know, crafting buttons. And those you can trade for like other stuff. And you can also, you know, get notes, which kind of reveal a little bit of backstory, I suppose. And yeah, it's just like, it's just a nice little adventure. There's not too much depth to it. And in fact, I was kind of hoping, cause I got the, roll in level in the second level, that I could go back to the first level and use that to like, find extra items or something like that. But if you go back to replay a level, it actually starts you as if you had just started that level. So it, you know, it's not a Metroidvania. You don't go back and like use new powers. So, you know, in that sense, it's a little more simplistic, but I was really charmed by it. The animation is lovely. The music's good. It very, very effectively emulates the Game Boy Color soundtrack specifically.
That's because it was recorded on a real Game Boy Color.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely believe it. Yeah. Like, having played many Game Boy Color games, I was like, yeah, this is authentic AF. But yeah, it's... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's $10. What do you think of Super Squidlet?
Yeah, it's delightful. Go pick it up. Also pick up Squidlet. It's also good. You know, it's a little more basic, but it's a Game Boy game, so that's the reason. But yeah, this one is an improvement in every way that I can find, and there's no real downside to this one. It's just not a whole ton of depth if you're looking for that, but I mean, you know, what it is very, very delightful.
Hey, first game's only $2, so if you're curious...
Yeah, exactly.
There you go, jump on that one. All right, next up is Bone Marrow, developed by Huge Pixel, published by Rattle Lake Games, released August 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Bone Marrow is a game in the genre of role-playing board logic puzzles. The game proposes to combine numbers in pairs, and these numbers have been paired with objects. Using their combination, you can create better weapons, shields, and potions, which will increase your attack and defense against dark monsters, but a wrong move will have consequences. Pernell, tell us about your time with Bone Marrow.
It's 2048. Okay. So for those who are familiar with 2048, well, you're already 3/4 of the way through this review. But for those who are not, 2048 is, well, I'll talk about the game and you'll pick up the connection yourself. So the idea is that you choose a character at the beginning of the game, and you end up going to one of the four stages that are slowly unlocked as you progress through the game. And what happens is you go to the, when you get dropped on the stage, you are on a grid of varying size, always a square though. And the idea is that on each turn, you can kind of slide all the objects on the board in one direction. So just up, right, down, or left. And every time you make this slide connection, all the objects on the board will slide along in that direction. And if objects of matching number and item type touch during the collision, they fuse. So, for example, there are four types of objects. There are weapons, defense items, food items. Okay, there's three types of items. My question is, I could ask you a fourth one, but my brain is not remembering it. But those three types of things. And so in order to say, for example, the level 2 food item is like an orange, and it's number 2 at the bottom of his icon. If a number 2 orange slides into another number 2 orange, they become a number 4 pair. So now, in order to get rid of the number the 4 pair, it has to match up with another 4 pair to become the number 8, whatever that food item is. And I think it's like a piece of meat, and it just kind of goes up to a certain point. I think the highest I ever really got on a run is like 16 because woof. But this works for the weapons, the armed defense, and also the food. During the day, there's two cycle types in the game. There's day and night. And this is only broken up by number of moves that you take. So let's just say, for example, daytime, there's 8 moves, then it becomes nighttime and another 8 moves. And it goes back to daytime. Now, what is the purpose of day and night cycles in this game? Well, during the day, you can't really pick anything up. Like, you can knock everything around and make it all fuse together. But you can't pick it up off the ground. It just stays there. However, at night, two things occur. One, sometimes enemies will show up, opposing foes that are trying to kill your character by draining your hit points. And other than that, the other thing you can do is pick up the objects you've been fusing this entire time. So you might have a level 16 sword, a level 16 shield out there. If you pick them both up, your attack and defense will go up by 16 apiece, respectively. Every time you collide with an opponent, also only during nighttime, you will actually do damage to them, and they will do damage to you. And it's proportionate to the amount of attack power you've got and the amount of defense you have to buffer it. Same goes for the opponent. And every time you have a collision, you lose some of that, too. Like, it depletes, so it's not a permanent buff. And your goal, of course, is to reduce their hit points to zero and kill them. Now, food items will heal you if you can pick those up off the ground. However, the detriment to this is at nighttime, the opponent can pick up this stuff, too. So if you slide to the right, thinking, oh, cool, I got a really good sword that's in that direction, I'll just slide over and pick it up. If there's a great item above it or to the right of the opponent, and they go sliding to the right, they'll pick it up, too, in both of their defenses. So there will be a number of times where you're like, oh, cool, good thing. You'll just like instinctively push the button, not realize that you're juicing up your opponent unintentionally, and then they're going to come at you when you slide or do combat with them, and they're going to mess your day up. It's interesting, too, because the way this kind of gameplay mechanic flows, it's different. It's just similar enough to 2048 that it's familiar, but it's just different enough to kind of throw a wrinkle into how you'd expect to play the game. Each of these levels can be beaten because you level up your character as you defeat the enemies, and the max level you can get is generally level 6. And then after a certain number of enemies beyond that, you'll get a clear notice, which means you can move on to the next stage. And you're getting points as you do all this stuff, too. So there's like a high score for stages and stuff of that nature as well. It's kind of funny in that I started to mess around with the game just to see what it was like, and then I got absorbed in it for 2 hours. It's a fun game. Like, I already liked 2048, so it shouldn't have surprised me that this one would have caught my attention, too, and ended up being fun to play. I only wish there was more music in the game, because that tune gets old very fast. but I honestly found this game to be enjoyable. It's another one of those titles that I never heard of up until now, and when I played it, I realized that it actually does quite click for me. So I would say, well, I guess I should give verdict stuff.
Yeah, $5. Give me your verdict.
I'm going to give this a fuck it, why not? It's primarily because I had fun with it. But if you already like 2048, or you've heard of it, or you just like general slide and block puzzles, that's definitely a fuck it, why not? You got nothing to really lose on trying this game out for the price. It's just a good time. I had a great time with it, and it's worth the money they're asking for it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, final game to talk about tonight is called No Thing, developed by Evil Indie Games and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released August 6th on Xbox One for $1.99. No Thing is a minimalistic, surreal action game set in the totalitarian regime of the future. Tells the story of an office clerk who was sent with an important message to the Queen of Ice. Cole, what's the message?
I can't tell you that. That's a spoiler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would be terrible. I mean, it just blurt that out, wouldn't it? game's only $2. Fucking go buy it and figure it out your damn self.
Well, Jesus, no, tell me about it first.
This is
yelling
this
at me.
An endless. I'm not yelling. You ain't heard me yell. This is an endless runner, basically. The game moves. It's a first-person perspective. It moves on its own. The only difference is that there's a track, and you need to turn left or turn right, whenever the case may be. The game will tell you turn left, turn right, and it will guide you where you need to be. But you can also just kind of go on your own. The problem is that if you do that, the runway is incredibly narrow, and you're just going to fall off. You're going to fall off a fuck ton. Just getting from point A to point B to finish one story level took way longer than it should have, because there is no forgiveness. If you are so much as a tiny little bit off the line, that's going to compound every time you make a turn, and then eventually you're just going to wind up falling. somewhere, somehow, someone decided that it was a good idea to make achievements for 500 and 1,000 turns in a run. That was dumb, but kudos to those who figured out you could cheese it, because you can, for if you want the completion, you can cheese it. And I honestly, I don't know how anybody would get it without cheesing it. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking with those achievements. But you can also cheese the rest of them if you want to, because you can just press Y and skip the level and the game considers it completed. So, I mean, if you want some quick and easy achievements, there you go. if you want an actual difficult endless runner, yeah. This is gonna fill that void. I will say that everything has like this cyberpunky neon 80s Tokyo kind of hot pink and hot blue and aesthetic going for it. And I wouldn't mind it so much, but there's like this CRT filter over it all as well. And it makes actually seeing a little difficult.
Yeah.
I am consciously aware that my glasses prescription has shit the bed already, even though I just got it a few months ago, and then I need a new
prescription. Oh, no, this game actively fucks with the visuals.
But, yeah, like, I don't want anybody to be like, you need new glasses, because, like, I do, but also, this game fucked with me. And it made that visual impairment a lot worse. So yeah, it's surprisingly difficult unless you cheese it, and then it's like, oh, here's your achievements in 10 minutes. I don't know, have fun with it.
Oh, it's $1.99. What do you think?
This is one of those where I go, fuck it, why not? It's nice to see a low starting price point for a game like this. Sometimes you just want to pick something up and spend a few minutes dicking around with it and checking it out and not have to pay $15.99 for it to do it.
I was pleasantly surprised with this one, because when I saw it release on Xbox, I believe on the Switch it's $1.
Yeah.
And I honestly expected it to be $4.99 on Xbox.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's only $1.99 makes me happy.
Yeah, I think it's one of those like, oh, you got some reward points burning a hole in your pocket? You want some easy achievements if you cheese them?
Yeah.
Do you want to play a runner? Here you go. Have fun. $2.
YOLO.
Yeah. Yeah. YOLO submarine.
Yeah. Oh, God. Are you going to draw a third one?
No, I fucking ain't. I got too much shit to do this week.
We all live in a YOLO submarine.
Yeah, we've done that joke twice, actually, Pernell.
Uh-huh. And I actually drew a little rickety-ass-looking submarine. And then the second time, I put a little anchor on it with that was a 2 and was all barely welded onto it.
Yep. And now so you have to make a third one.
I'm not.
But now they should be inside the submarine. It's like taking on water. And the guy goes, are you sure this is safe? And the pilot's going, YOLO.
Now, see, the word YOLO spells out the submarine. Like, the patch on the side is an L. And then there's the portholes are the O's, and then the rotor is the Y. Yeah.
You know, if you're not doing the picture, this is just a waste of explaining. It's a waste, all of it.
Man. I don't got time.
Just got to slap a 3 on that picture. Just like
this time, it's personal. Make
it look like duct tape over the 2. That's just a 3 in marker. God. All right, any final words to end the show?
Put your kids in a mask. Don't load them into the soul cannon that is a maskless school system.